Good evening, everyone. I'm Lino Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program tonight, we will take a look at sickle cell disease, a group of inherited red blood cell disorders, very common among people of African descent, according to experts. And to do that, we are joined by our expert of the day, Dr. Annette Akinsete, National Director and CEO of the Sickle Cell Foundation in Nigeria. Dr. Akinsete, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm here.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. Sickle cell disease, we hear often sickle cell anemia. Can you help us understand what this condition is?
Okay, very, very quickly. It's an inherited disorder. That is something you get from your father and your mother. And it is not infected.
Okay, I think we have a little technical difficulty. We will get Dr. Annette back on the phone very soon. And meanwhile, we're going to listen to the news with Maud Cora.
Two of four experimental Ebola drugs being tested in Congo seem to be saving lives, international health authorities announced on Monday. The two drugs, one developed by Regeneron Pharmaceuticals and the other by researchers from the U.S. National Institute of Health, NIH, are antibodies that work by blocking the virus. The preliminary findings prompted to prioritize their use in the African country. During the West Africa Ebola epidemic several years ago, studies showed a hint that another antibody mixture named ZMAP worked, but not clear proof. But in this latest study, significantly fewer people died among those giving the Regeneron drug or the NIH drug compared to those who received ZMAP. Experts say the data is preliminary. The number of undernourished people has dropped by almost 50% in the past two decades, according to the UN. However, the new edition of the State of Food Security and Nutrition in the World reveals that hunger is on the rise in almost all African sub-regions. This makes Africa the region with the highest prevalence of undernourishment at almost 20%. It's estimated that over 2 billion people have no regular access to safe, nutritious and sufficient food, including 8% of the population in North America and Europe. Now, the United Nations for Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, says malaria has killed more than 1,800 people in Burundi this year. In its latest situation report, OCHA says 5.7 million cases of malaria have been recorded in Burundi in 2019. Of those cases, over 1,801 died from the mosquito-borne disease in Burundi between January 1st and July 21st. According to the UN Humanitarian Agency, the outbreak caused cross-coast epidemic proportions in May, but the country has not declared a national emergency. OCHA says a lack of preventative measures like mosquito nets, climatic changes, and increased movement of people from mountain areas with low immunity to malaria were driving the crisis. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Hello, music lovers. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This Sunday, tune in for a full hour of Africa's best music. Chatty and electro dance music? Check. Classic Mande Griot music? Check. Interview with founder of Ghanaian Hip Life, Reggie Rockstone? Check. Everybody. There's this and so much more music for everyone in this show. So don't miss it. This Sunday, 1500 and 2000 UTC. on Music Time in Africa.
You're listening to The Voice of America. This is Health Chat with your host, Lenore Moudou. And on the show today, we will speak about, we are actually discussing sickle cell disease, sickle cell anemia, a condition that affects many people on the African continent, as well as people of African descent around the world, actually. And our guest today is Dr. Annette Akinsete. She is National Director and CEO of the Sickle Cell Foundation Nigeria. And Dr. Akinsete is joining us from Nigeria on the phone with us. And we will have our discussion in a few minutes with Dr. Akinsete. Sickle cell anemia is also known to be prominent, as I mentioned, among people of African descent. But experts say that people who have had malaria in the past have a certain immunity against the condition. And that's according to experts. So people who live in regions where malaria is endemic can develop an immunity. Actually, people with sickle cell, rather, can develop an immunity from malaria. And we will have our discussion with Dr. Akinsete in a moment. Go!
What's up, Africa? It's Jackson Vunganyi.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town.
Can I be upfront with you? That's exactly what Nadia and I plan to do every Wednesday at 17:30 UTC. Upfront looks at issues that affect you.
Since the world is moving at a faster rate, they need to have a major computer.
Interesting news.
Canadian man was sentenced for drunk driving after being pulled over in his mother's motorized wheelchair. 35-year-old man was fined and placed on probation.
And of course, music. No clouds in my stones. Entertainment, celebrities, you name it, we'll talk about it.
And of course, we love to hear from you. Send us your thoughts and comments. Our email address is upfront@voanews.com.
So don't forget to check us out every Wednesday at 17:30 UTC on The Voice of America.
If you are just joining us tonight, we are discussing sickle cell disease with our guest, Dr. Annette Akinsete, National Director and CEO of the Sickle Cell Foundation in Nigeria. Dr. Akinsete, are you there?
I'm here. I'm back.
Great. It's good to have you back. We apologize for the technical difficulties we had earlier to our listeners. So, Dr. Akinsete, I was saying something earlier when we were trying to reach you, is that people who have sickle cell trait may have an immunity towards malaria. Can you kind of clarify that? But I know you were trying to explain further what sickle cell was. So that's something that if you could clarify as well.
Okay. Then let me just end the stage first. I said it's an inherited disease, mm-hmm. and it's a disorder of the genetic disorder, something in the genes. And what it is actually is a disorder of the blood. So it's an inherited genetic disorder of the blood. And in the blood, the problem lies in the red blood cell. And you know, the red blood cell is that which helps us carry oxygen around the body to tissues and organs, all right? And then inside that red blood cell, the problem lies in a substance called hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is that substance that attaches to the oxygen, okay?
Okay.
Normal hemoglobin is designated hemoglobin A. That is the usual one. Most people have that. But then this abnormal one we're talking about here, which is sickle cell anemia, sickle cell is a nice hemoglobin S. So when you inherit this genetic S from your father and your mother, they come together and you're designated hemoglobin SS. And that is a sickle cell anemia condition. And clinically, how they present is a lot of weakness, tiredness, shortage of blood, because the blood cells, those red blood cells are not normal. The shapes are different. They're not nice and round and able to glide easily through blood vessels. They are shaped like a sickle, or like, if you like a banana. Mm-hmm. So they tend to clog blood vessels and cause blockage. And so blood does not reach the end organs or tissues. And with that, all the symptoms and signs come up, okay?
Okay.
So what we worry about in sickle cell is that those blood cells don't live long, whereas the normal red blood cells will live for 120 days, about 3 months in the body. The sickle's red cells live only for 10 to 20 days, and they die off. So the body's struggling all the time to keep up, you know, producing more red blood cells to keep up the red cell volume. And so the pathology and all the things we find that are associated with this condition, shortage of blood, jaundice, yellowness of the eyes, bone pain crisis because the body's always being produced more cells, you know, all these things are as a result of this shape in red blood cells.
Okay.
And then you talked about the trait. The trait is a carrier trait. That is, it's all like myself. I am designated hemoglobin AS. That is, I have A, some of my blood cells have hemoglobin A, some of my blood cells have hemoglobin S. Okay. And then the way nature was, nature threw up is a mutation. This genetic disorder we're talking about is a mutation. It happened eons ago, tons and tons of years ago. And it was nature's way of preserving the species. Because I think nature found that those who were AA, the normal red blood cell people, tended to succumb to malaria. So they had more severe and very severe attacks of malaria, severe complications, and they tended to die. Whereas when this gene was thrown up and then you had the combination of A and S, they tended to stay alive. But I don't think nature reckoned with S and S coming together to cause the sickle cell state, because they cannot even tolerate malaria at all. However, that carrier state, the trait, that A and S coming together, is that we have a certain immunity to severe attacks of malaria. Uh-huh. Not that we don't get malaria, but to severe attacks of malaria and severe complications of malaria. And I read in an article that we haven't seen to date the most severe complications of malaria called cerebral malaria in anyone with hemoglobin AS, but in the carrier state. So there is that kind of immunity associated with hemoglobin AS, the trait or the carrier state of sickle cell.
Okay. All right. This I mean, it's incredible how much information that we sometimes don't know about this condition. Mm. Because when you talk about the sickle cell trait and then the sickle cell disease and the sickle cell anemia, sometimes, you know, you don't even know if these terms are interchangeable. It can be very confusing. So we really appreciate you clarifying that for us. Now, you talk about genetic link to the disease, and what I read is that people of African descent are more prone to having sickle cell traits. Do we know why?
I think, you know, the reason is, the reason is an accident of geography, where we are located in the world. If you superimpose sickle cell map on the malaria map, for instance, it goes across the tropics. So you find malaria where you find malaria.
Mm.
That's across the tropics, the malaria belt of West Africa, across East Africa. In Southern Africa, for instance, you don't have sickle cell. In Northern Africa, you don't get sickle cell. So in South Africans and the Zulus, we don't have sickle cell amongst them. And that's because they don't have malaria.
That's interesting.
There's a relationship between malaria and sickle cell. It's across the malaria belt. Wherever you find malaria, you will find sickle cell.
Okay.
That's across the tropics. West Africa, East Africa, down to the Asian subcontinent. So you do find it in non-African persons.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, it's more related to malaria. You find it in Indians, in the Pakistanis, in the Asian subcontinent. And of course in America, because there are black people there, persons of African descent in America. But in terms of geographical spread, it is found where you find malaria, the malaria belt of West Africa.
Okay.
That's
the so, Dr. Akinsele, when we look at diagnosis of sickle cell, if the condition is genetics, I suppose parents, couples, people that are getting married, are asked to do they get tested? Is it part of the test that maybe couples should do or are doing before thinking about having children?
Yeah. Now that's a very sensitive and controversial area of sickle cell programming.
Okay.
Because here in Nigeria, there are some states, and we call them regions, states of the country, that have come up with laws like criminalize persons who are carriers coming together to have a child.
Really?
You're caught. You're imprisoned or you're fined. But having said that, it's something that has not been passed by, a bill passed by the parliament, but has not been assented to by the governors. And all the same, the Nigerian Bar Association, the Association of Lawyers of Nigeria, are up in arms because it's a civil rights issue. Mm-hmm. You do not really, it's one's right to determine who they marry or who they have a child with. Mm-hmm. You can't call me a criminal because I'm having a child with someone else who's there. Besides, there are mistakes in laboratories. We deal with that every day. Many laboratories come up with results that are inaccurate, and they brand someone who is AAA, and they go ahead and have a child with someone else who's a carrier, and they have a child who has to go. Homes have been broken, marriages broken, because couples thought all along they were normal AA persons, but then it turns out that the results they relied upon all the years were inaccurate. And they were actually carriers, that is, they had a trait, and so they had a child who had to sell. Okay, so we cannot criminalize it. However, it's best to know. And what we do in our foundation, for instance, raising awareness, is getting the young people, targeting school children, so they know early on, before they start dating, or having going into relationships, or having them in the children, what they are, whether they're carriers, and so they are able to make informed decisions when the time comes to have a child. Besides that, genetic counseling has been found to be the most scientific way of going about this. So couples who are intending to marry, and it's best to present yourself for genetic counseling in this part of the world. Most people are sure what they are, that they're not carriers, that they don't have a trait. But some are not so sure. And if you're not so sure, present yourself for testing and then go on and access genetic counseling. Genetic counseling can be accessed in any of our hospitals around here. And we in our foundation will do that for couples as well. We teach and educate that persons get to know their status. We call it genotype, when we actually phenotype. You want to know if you're AS, you're a carrier, are you at risk of having a child with sickle cell? And if so, what are you up against? And the genetic counseling is actually laying all the facts on the table for you. No sugar coating. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to compare you or force you to marry or have a child with someone who has a trait as well. Nobody's going to tell you not to either. Okay, so they give you all the facts, and you also get testimonies, as they call, of persons and parents of children with sickle cell. So armed with all that information, you make that decision yourself. An informed decision is made by the couple themselves. But then, and it's been found, because I have medical students who are doing some studies, observational studies, and seeing that those who access genetic counseling, about 80% of them will go their separate ways and not have children together. So there will still be those who say, despite everything, yes, I'll still have a child with this person. I love her. I love him. We'll have our child together. So, but the vast majority will go their separate ways once they know that they're at risk of having children with sickle cell.
Okay. So then when someone has sickle cell, living with sickle cell, I mean, you talked about you being an AS, for example. Is there a way to manage your sickle cell trait? I don't even know how to put that. To the point that it doesn't develop into this.
At all. Persons who are carriers who have a sickle cell trait, who are designated hemoglobin AS. Like I give myself as an example all the time. We're not ill. We are healthy carriers. In fact, that's the way we're designated. Okay. Healthy carriers of the sickle cell gene. We are not ill at all. There's nothing we can't do. We're not ill at all. And so we don't know. It's not written on the forehead, so you can't tell. There are no symptoms. There are no signs. You can't tell that you have the gene.
Okay.
And the only way you can tell is to get tested. But those who have the full-blown illness, who have hemoglobin excess, who have sickle cell anemia, are really ill.
Okay.
They tend to have what we call a bone pain crisis. And I tell you, when you ask them sometimes children, you ask them on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is this pain? You hear things like 20, 50, because the pain is through the roof. Or those who've had children, because yes, we do have some of them who have had children, they tell you it's worse than labor pain.
Oh, wow.
When they had natural, normal delivery, it's worse than labor pain. So that is the hallmark of this condition. Pain, pain, pain. But besides that, there's also complications such as stroke in children. So you'll find it hard to believe a child can have stroke. Oh, yes.
Stroke.
So children between the ages of 2 and 16, we educate that it should all come out. Any child who has sickle cell anemia between the ages of 2 and 16 must come out and be and have a test that we call TCD, transcranial Doppler scan. Very simple, non-invasive test that helps us determine those who are at risk of developing stroke. So we'll put them aside and give them preventative measures like hydroxyurea or blood transfusion, repeated blood transfusion, that prevent them from having stroke. Because I tell you, once a child has a stroke, the dynamics of the whole family just changes.
Yes.
I've seen it. And it's best prevented. So, and that's the funny thing about a stroke in sickle cell is that it occurs in children. Once they reach like late teens, early adulthood, that risk drops.
Mm-hmm.
So we put them on these measures until they get to that age when they no longer have that tendency or high risk of developing a stroke. But then other complications rear their head, like chronic leg ulcers in the leg that just fail to heal. And that's a very stigmatizing condition, very stigmatizing complication. I had a young girl, 19-year-old, a university girl, who dropped out of school because she was being stigmatized. Nobody wanted to talk to her. They gave her, they branded her the girl with the leg sore. She was no longer called her. And her mom brought her to us that she had attempted suicide.
Wow.
3 times.
Stigmatized.
And that's besides the other stigmatizing issues. Because
yes.
These persons with sickle cell, we also advocate for them at school and at work. They are stigmatized. They don't get jobs, and they're qualified to get the anesthesia. And they ask the employers, why would you discriminate? And they say, we can't deal with anyone with sickle cell because they're absent from work.
Wow, that's discrimination.
And things like that. You know, so they have a lot that they're dealing with emotionally, mentally, besides the physical complications. Problems that associated with the illness.
So, Dr. Akinsene, if we look at the way the condition is managed, because what you are explaining is it's so tough. Only imagining somebody going through this almost every day, it's very difficult. So, what is available to treat the disease? Can we say that there is no cure? How do we manage sickle cell disease?
Excellent question. Now, the thing is this. We here in Nigeria, we're advocating, we haven't got it yet, we're advocating what we call newborn screening. We want to know in good time, before a certain child is born, we want to know if this child has sickle cell. Because at birth, they don't look anything different. They're all the same. Because you can't tell if the child has sickle cell until around the first year of around 9 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, up to 1 year. Then they develop what we call hand and foot syndrome. But before that age, before they even develop these symptoms and signs, we can institute measures that prevents these complications. You can introduce measures like simple antibiotics, penicillin, simple vaccinations, and this will prevent these symptoms and signs from coming. But they don't even have those hand and foot syndrome that you normally would get in a child of, say, 9 months to 1 year. So that doesn't happen. And one children statistic that we share here in Nigeria and across the world is that Nigeria has the highest burden of sickle cell in the world. Okay, 150,000 babies are born every year in Nigeria with sickle cell, 150,000. And of these 150,000, over 100,000 do not live to the age of 5.
Wow.
I don't need to celebrate their 50, but they die off. And what kills them is infection. So if you catch them early, make that diagnosis in good time, before they begin to show signs and symptoms of infection, you institute those preventive measures I talked about, like vaccination, preventive prophylaxis, they're called. Preventive antibiotics. They don't get these infections that kill them. So they make it to the age of 5. They hit that milestone of 5 years. And then we continue with daily paludrin. Paludrin prevents malaria. Malaria is something that they mustn't get at all. If they get malaria, the little blood that they have, blood cells, the few blood cells they have, they all be broken down and they die from anemia.
Wow.
Okay, so we just daily paludrin to prevent malaria, and then daily folic acid to encourage multiplication of red blood cells. Those are things they must get every day of their life. Okay. And then, of course, I got sort of immunization and antibiotics that prevent infection. So they do well once they reach age 5. The next time you begin to watch them again is around puberty. Because everyone knows that at puberty, that's this growth spurt that tends to pull, for some reason, is linked to drop in immunity. So they also begin to have infections and other things. But once you watch them, their do's and don'ts that we teach, even the young children, they know. The little girl I saw this morning said to me, "Oh, doctor, I have my raincoat, I have my umbrella, and I have my flask of water." Those are the things. Drink water frequently, and lots of water, copiously, to prevent dehydration. Because dehydration leads to the crisis we talk about. And prevent extreme cold, don't get wet, do not stay too long in air-conditioned rooms, do not stay in extreme heat. You know, so we've seen all those little do's and don'ts that prevent the crisis. So in other words, the philosophy of treatment, of management, is preventing complications. Prevention seems better, definitely, than cure. Because once the complications set in, it's difficult to treat. If a child has a crisis, for instance, and right there, with pains, you give them analgesics, medication for pain. Mm-hmm. But because some pains can be so severe, we have to start dealing with giving them opioids. And that's another different kettle of fish. Managing pain with opioids and the problem of addiction, because that's also an issue that we have to deal with amongst in this population. And luckily, Nigeria is not too bad, because for some reason we deal with pain differently, I think, as Africans compared with some other cultures I've come across. We are more stoic, or we have family members tell you, should deal with the pain. Even hospitals, the treating nurses thought it should be more emphatic. I've seen nurses that tell patients, come on, you should be used to this pain by now, and all that, and that's really not what the patient wants to hear at that time. So we manage pain, prevent complications at all levels.
Wow. You
know? And then above all, here in Nigeria, in our center, we're opening our doors for bone marrow transplantation in November of this year, if all things go according to plan. And that is a cure for sickle cell. Normally, Nigerians that can afford it, it's very expensive, go abroad to the UK, to America, and to India to get a bone marrow transplantation, stem cell transplantation from a compatible donor, mostly siblings. But we're going to start ours from November of this year.
Okay. And Dr. Akinsete, before we wrap, if people want to have more information about your organization, how can they reach you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, beautiful. We have a website, so that's usually where I say go to, www.sicklecellfoundation.com. All one word, www.sicklecellfoundation.com. And then by email, info@sicklecellfoundation.com.
Okay.
My telephone is open. I give everyone my telephone number. Please call me.
You are so generous. Yes. Thank you so much.
It's my office phone.
Oh, okay. You want to give your phone number? Is that what it is?
Yes, it's my official number.
Okay, go ahead, please.
It's 0816-708-1300.
Okay. All right.
Okay, of course, the Nigerian number.
And that's the Nigerian number,
813-708-1300. That's my official number.
Okay, doctor.
If I didn't answer, I have some answers for me.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, too.
Dr. Annette Akinsete, National Director and CEO. Akinsete. Sorry, I was butchering your name. All right.
And me?
I say sorry for butchering your name. Thank you.
Not butchered. You did well. Not too bad.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
and
then.
Thanks to all of you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
I'm your host, Lino Humudu, in Washington, with producer Daniel Brown and Maud Kora, with the news engineer, Misha. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Palca.